First Name Sports starts now.
We're kind of on a first name basis around here.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Okay, let's get started.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Greg Frank.
What's going on, America? It's Friday afternoon on the Sports Map Radio Network. Hope everybody's Fridays are off to a good start. We're going to make them that much better as we launch you into the weekend. The Florida Panthers get a much-needed victory in the Stanley Cup Final. They win Game 3 last night in Sunrise. Game 4 of the NBA Finals tips off this evening in Miami, just not too far from Sunrise, as the Heat will look to pull even with the Denver Nuggets. And by the way, if you're into the ponies, my mom actually was the one to inform me of the postponement of the Belmont Stakes for tomorrow, as the air quality in New York, it makes me wonder, is it worse for the horse than it is for the jockey? Because we had a baseball game played last night in Philadelphia. I think the Yankees played last night. So if we're able to play baseball in these conditions. Yes, the Yankees, matter of fact, played a doubleheader yesterday. They made up their game that was postponed on Wednesday. So, and that's interesting that the Belmont, maybe it is worse for the horse. I'm not a doctor or anything like that.
Well, it's worse for the horse than the jockey, because the horse is the one running and breathing in all the air.
Well, right, but it is still just like a 2-minute race.
No, but I understand. I'm surprised that they were able to play baseball.
And the jockeys are still inhaling a good, like, it's not like they don't have like a mask on.
Well, they could, like, right?
I mean, I guess, yeah. But at least I hope my mom's right about this, because I haven't seen any of this yet, but I don't know why she would lie about it. So there seems like the Belmont might not happen. As far as the rest of the happenings on today's show, we will get to our Friday 5 at the end of the show, our 10th inning, and a game last night in Atlanta. And, you know, there are certain games in Major League Baseball when you watch them. I think this is more on a local level when you're in a market and you're following a team and you just go, wow. Circle that one, because that could really be a turning point in either direction. We had one of those last night talking about New York a lot, the Mets down in Atlanta. So I wanted to touch on that, and gosh, Buck Showalter with some interesting comments to say the least. But we start with the Stanley Cup Final. Here's how it ended last night in Sunrise.
Bennett up the near side, looks across for Verhaeghe, high slug shot. He scores! Connor Verhaeghe! The overtime winner! Take it 3-2 the final.
Hanging around. Carter Verhaeghe flops a nut straight. Pay that man his money. Overtime winner for Carter Verhaeghe.
How about that with a Rounders reference from the guy who we had on the show yesterday? That's Bill Lindsay, the color guy with Doug Plagans, the play-by-play man, as the Florida Panthers get into the series, kind of, sort of, maybe 2-1, closest it can be after 3. Series doesn't start until somebody wins on the road. That hasn't happened yet. But that's what I wanted to touch on with the Stanley Cup Final. Was last night the moment of the series for Florida, or is it the start of the Panthers clawing their way back? I tend to believe it is the former and not the latter. Panthers did some good things last night. Obviously, Verhaeghe has been one of their better forwards in the playoffs, had the game-winning, series-winning goal against the Boston Bruins. Game-winning goal last night. Matthew Tkachuk gets the game-tying goal at the end of regulation. He's been their best forward by far. And Welcome to the Stanley Cup final, Sergei Bobrovsky. He makes 25 saves and has some big ones at different points, at different junctures of regulation when it felt like the momentum was favoring Vegas. So all of that said, Florida was still down 2-1 late in regulation last night. How about 8 penalties taken by Florida? Now, not all of them were power plays for Vegas, as there were a couple of coincidental situations. But Vegas still ended up with 6 power plays and scored 2 power play goals. And a lot of the guys on the TNT set last night were talking about the importance of special teams in the playoffs. And I think if you're Vegas, you're saying, hey, we were up 2-1 and our power play went 2-for-6. We didn't close the door, but if a bad game for us is going to be one in which we still have a lead in the final minutes of regulation and we still score a few power play goals, then we're in good shape. And you look at a play that was made in, I believe, the first period by Radko Gudas last night, who's a journeyman defenseman for the Panthers, and he's known to be a little bit of a low IQ player. Let's just say that. Where there's a delayed call on Vegas, and Florida's about to go to the power play, and then Gudas takes a retaliatory cross-checking minor, and boom. No power play, 4-on-4 coincidentals. And it's little things like that where when you watch Florida, you think, this team's going to win 4 games out of 5 against, which is what it's going to have to be now. They're going to win 4 out of 5 against Vegas. And so you give them credit for digging deep and finding a way in the guts of the game. And a lot of times in the playoffs, your best players have to play like that. And that's what happened with Tkachuk and Verhaeghe and Bobrovsky. But another very strong thorn in the side of the Panthers is that the Knights can beat you in a lot of different ways. And last night, I know they didn't win the game, but obviously we came into this series thinking, well, the more goals are scored, the better things are for Vegas. Florida needs to keep things lower scoring. Sure enough, we had 12 total goals from Vegas in the first 2 games. So, yeah, they're going to win those 2 games. Then we only get 5 goals last night. And it still goes right down to the wire. Florida ends up winning. But last night, Vegas was oh so close to just winning the game 2-1 or 3-1 and holding a 3-0 series lead. So that's a Florida type of game script that Vegas almost won. Now, you could argue, Vegas is so comfortable playing these kinds of games. Florida is. And they are. They're undefeated in overtime in the playoffs. So, whether it's Boston, Toronto, Carolina, or now Vegas, when they get in these close games, it does not always seem to phase the Florida Panthers. But having said that, I just think that are you able to, it's like a baseball team, ironically enough, another South Florida team, the Marlins, they have a very, not very good, but pretty solid record so far. They're second in the National League East. But their run differential is like minus 30. They're 35-28, the Marlins are, but they're minus 30 run differential. So that means that they're winning a lot of close games and getting blown out in losses. Can you win a Stanley Cup doing that in hockey? I don't think there's a Florida blowout in this series. I think if Florida does claw its way back, it's going to be with similar type of victories to what we saw last night. So can the Panthers, who have been almost unstoppable in these one-goal games, overtime games, can they just run through 4 of the best teams in the National Hockey League, winning those kinds of games routinely? It's a tough sell for me there. So we shall see if the Panthers can continue to win these close, nitty-gritty, tight games, because it does feel like that is their only path to success in this series. And Vegas, on the other hand, Aiden Hill has played well in these playoffs. A couple of shutouts in the Dallas series, for most of last night was pretty good. And so while last night is a good start for Florida, the Panthers are going to have to play their best game in the series tomorrow night. Because I will say, if the Panthers clone their Game 3 performance and play the same way in Game 4, I would expect the Knights to win. So, I know, people like to say, well, it's a series now. And on its surface, yeah, sure. Again, it can't be any closer than 2-1 after 3. Florida's got Game 4 at home to even it up. But having watched all three games, I'm still pretty firmly in the camp of Vegas is a better team, and this thing is over in 5. And I felt that way, really Game 2 was when I just felt, oh, these are two different stratospheres because of how Game 1 ended and then all of Game 2. And Vegas playing with a lead for a good portion of Game 3, I think made me feel that even though the Panthers got the win last night, there's still another level that Florida needs to get to. And Bobrovsky was good. He's going to have to keep playing that way for the Panthers to have a chance. We'll take a timeout. NBA Finals Game 4 tonight in South Beach. Heat, can they pull even? Nuggets, will they take a commanding 3-1 series lead? We'll discuss. First Name Sports, Sports Map Radio.
We're back with First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Live from the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Greg Frank.
Game 4, NBA Finals tonight. Miami Heat hosting the Denver Nuggets. And by the way, very much a get-right game of sorts for the Miami Heat, who have now lost 3 straight playoff games on their home floor. Dating back to Game 4 of the Eastern Conference Finals against the Boston Celtics, they lost Game 4 at home. Of course, Game 6 was the Derek White game. And then Game 3 of the NBA Finals went the way of the Denver Nuggets. By the way, the Belmont Stakes is still happening last night. On Saturday, my mom with a little bit of a gaffe on her part. So it's also my part, my show. So I got to own that. But if you were locked and loaded for the Belmont on Saturday, that's still in line to go off tomorrow. But anyway, they will definitely be playing tonight in Miami. And I think this has to be the Jimmy Butler game of the series for the Heat. Because as the series wears on, I think you'll start to see, if Miami can win tonight, I think you'll start to see the role players all gain that ample belief, and you'll start to see Gabe Vincent and Max Strus shooting the ball with a lot of confidence. You'll start to see Kyle Lowry maybe, have a game later in the series that he's capable of having, as having been a part of that Raptors team in 2019 that won the NBA championship. So I think the closer Miami gets to actually doing this, it's more likely to think that they're going to be able to get more, Heat culture-y type wins. But right now is the kind of game where their backs are against the wall, as far as I'm concerned. They have to win tonight. And I think that the way Game 3 went down on Wednesday, where you had Miami just playing catch-up the entire time, there's a real gut-check moment for the Heat. And I think when you're facing adversity and when you are in these kind of gut check scenarios, sometimes you just need your best player to say, hop on my back, we're going back to the Mile High City 2-2. As I've mentioned a couple of times now this week, Jimmy Butler has 1 30-point game since the Bucks series. Okay, that's like 6 weeks now. And while I don't think it's the correct characterization to say that Butler has carried the Heat to the NBA Finals, which was something that was out there a lot during the Eastern Conference playoffs, he needs to have one of those kind of games tonight. Like, I need 40. And he's got to be the best player on the court. Because if we're going to talk about this guy like this is some all-time run that he's taken the Heat on, even though I don't agree with that, well then, can you at least have one game in this series when you show that? And when you play like the guy that has the whole weight of the team on your back? So that's a big thing for me tonight, is we need that kind of playoff gimme type of game. And as I said, they're at home. It's been a struggle for them at home recently. And the two wins for Denver in this series, you just watch the game and think, these teams aren't close to the same in terms of talent level. And they really aren't. And as much as we can talk about Heat culture and how well the Heat battle and the intangibles favoring them and the shooting sometimes getting hot at the right time, you don't get to the NBA Finals without at least one alpha male in your locker room, for lack of a better term, and Butler's supposed to be that guy. So, can he find a vintage game in him and have one of the bigger nights of his career? I think that that's the big thing that needs to change for Miami tonight. Because Denver doesn't really have to change anything. There is an amazing level of comfort that I think certain teams, and I think the Nuggets fit this billing. Certain teams have this, like, we know we're better than the other team. We're not going to tighten up in the moment. We're just going to go out and play like the better team. And our opponent isn't beating us if we do that. And that's a, you know, as much as we talk about the intangibles of Miami, that's a nice kind of quiet confidence that I get a sense that Denver plays with. Not the biggest of trash talkers. Not making a lot of headlines for things off the court. But their play on the court does all the talking. And when they do that enough, then they just believe that they're better and they're just going to keep playing that way. So Denver just needs to keep maintaining the level that it's played at really most of this series, because again, Miami has a big fourth quarter on Sunday night. Otherwise, this thing's 3-0. You know, so for the better part of the 12 quarters we've seen of the NBA Finals, Denver's the better team. So why do they need to change anything? What needs to change for Miami is Jimmy Butler needs to be the best player on the floor tonight. It might be oversimplifying things, but that's it. They might get another Heat culture-type game. They might get a nice Gabe Vincent shooting game. You know, but I don't think that you can clone game two three more times. Once, maybe twice, you need these kinds of Jimmy Butler games. And if not now, when? At home, down 2-1, needing to pull even, heading back to Denver. It's now or never. As far as I'm concerned. Now, again, Miami has, I've heard the analogy that the Heat are like a cat, right? And a cat has 9 lives. Okay. So I don't expect them to lay down, But I said this on, I guess it was yesterday. Have the Heat met their match a little bit here? Where some of those things that the Heat do well, mental toughness and outside shooting, particularly in the playoffs, which can run hot and cold, they don't necessarily have enough to hang their heads on to say we can beat one of the best teams in the NBA 4 out of 7 times. That's at least how this has felt so far 3 games in, that they'll keep it competitive and they'll fight, scratch, claw, not go down without a fight. And maybe even if they win tonight, they end up losing this thing in a competitive 6 games. I ended up still on 7, and I'm not going to deviate from that. I picked Denver in 7 at the beginning of the series because I do think Miami will find a way to win tonight. Like, if they've made it this far doing the things that we've talked about they've been so good at with, you know, red-hot outside shooting and, you know, really strong team chemistry and, you know, obviously in the Milwaukee series, a lot of big Jimmy games. Is their formula just, you know, going to go to you know what right now? Like, it doesn't. I think that if they lose, they'll go down fighting. And if they fight enough, they should be able to win at least one more game in this series. And it should be tonight. So I think Miami wins the game tonight. But that's because I have a lot of confidence in the fact that the Heat will respond, that Jimmy Butler will play better. You know, I started saying, well, that this has to happen, and Denver doesn't have to do anything differently. But I think if you've watched Miami the last 6-7 weeks, you know that they are going to dig deep and play better than they did the last time when they lost and they were just chasing the game the whole time. I mean, just look at how comfortable they looked in Game 7 against the Celtics when they were facing history that they didn't want to make as the first team that lost a best-of-7 from up 3-0. And they went up there and won pretty easily in Game 7 in Boston. So, hey, maybe they look at this and say, well, we're down 2-1 for the first time. Everybody's picking Denver. What do we have to lose? I think Miami finds a way tonight. I do. And we'll come back here talking about a pivotal Game 5 on Monday in Denver with the series knotted at 2. We'll take a timeout. I mentioned at the beginning of the show, sometimes there are those baseball games where you just circle and say, remember that one. We had one with a big market team last night in Atlanta. That's next. First Name Sports, Sports Map Radio.
And that's drilled to right field, and the Braves win the ball game. Ozzie Albies, a 3-run walk-off home run.
You're back with First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Live from the Sports Map Radio studios, here's Greg Frank.
There's Gary Cohen with the call last night in Atlanta as the Braves complete a sweep of the Mets. Braves are sitting pretty atop the National League East standings. And things aren't so pretty for the Mets. Fourth place in the National League East. If you follow Frank Fleming on Twitter, the Barstool guy, he was losing his mind last night.
He's always losing his mind.
Always is. Yeah. And I guess when you're a Mets fan, they give you, over the years, they've given you a lot of things to lose your mind
That's
over.
What it does to you. It makes you crazy.
As they lose last night, and the Mets are, Frank has deemed every June the June swoon for the Mets because they always play poorly in June. And it's funny, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago where when we were at Memorial Day, we kind of said, well, we're about 1/3 of the way through the baseball season. Let's look up and kind of see what we got. And I think that's the earliest you can start to say, okay, this might be who we are. And you know, it doesn't mean your season's over if you're underachieving. Doesn't mean you've won the World Series if you're overachieving. But there's enough of a sampling there to maybe at least peek at the standings and take them at face value, for perhaps for the first time in the year. And we did 3 underachievers and 3 overachievers in each of the leagues. And our National League underachievers were 3 teams that were in the playoffs last year, the Mets, the Phillies, and the Padres. And the Phillies have played better recently now, having won five in a row. And matter of fact, the Mets swept the Phillies at the end of May into early June. And then the Phillies picked up like five or six games on the Mets this week because the Mets have lost, I think it's six in a row now, whereas the Phillies have won five in a row. And so the Phillies seem to be maybe finding their stride. They have a big series this weekend against the Dodgers, whereas the Mets have nosedived. And, you know, Atlanta has opened up an 8.5-game cushion after the sweep of the Mets. And we talked about it earlier in the week with John Michaels from 680 The Fan in Atlanta, how this was going to be an important series to really create some distance. Because, again, I mentioned the Marlins. They're 35-28. Luis Arraez is a fun story. We'll see if they can keep this going, but they're just winning so many close games. Miami's under 500 on the road this year, despite that 35-28 record. So I don't know how seriously we take them in the NL East. Talked about the Phillies starting to play better. But the Mets now sit at 30-33. And I mentioned 8.5 behind Atlanta, 9 back in the loss column. And not only do they get swept by the Braves last night, but Pete Alonso gets hit on the wrist, and he's now going to go to the IL and might not return until after the All-Star break. So a lot of things are piling up for the Mets, and none of them are good. And the way in which they lost last night, I understand that it is still just one out of 162, but obviously you have these moments during the course of a baseball season where if the team comes back and they win a game that they shouldn't have won, you say, well, circle that one because that's going to get them going in the right direction. And perhaps it does, or, you know, there's the old phrase, momentum is only as good as the next day's starting pitcher. It really depends on the team in terms of how much these things prove to be pivotal turning points in one way or another. But gosh, that Mets series in Atlanta, especially last night, they were up 10-7 after seven innings, and the Braves tie the game with two in the eighth and one in the ninth and then win the game on a walk-off home run. That sure feels like a deflating loss when you couple it with the fact that you lost one of your best hitters in Alonso, who's going on the IL. And then we hear this from Buck Showalter last night after the loss.
You've talked a lot about the resolve of this group. What is the challenge when you have losses like this piling up of keeping the right mindset as a group?
I think tonight's game was an indication of that. And the second game here and the first game here. Guys came here and competed. They're as good as you want to see. You know, scored 10 runs tonight against one of the best pitchers in the league. And I'm real proud of them. You know, there's a lot of opportunities there to fold the tent. These guys aren't going to do that. And, you know, Pete being down and they don't – I'm proud of them. I look at it as positive other than, you know, we just ran out of – couldn't get outs. Ran, used every bullet we had, or arrow. I'll use that word, but just couldn't get that last out. We got a check swing that was obviously a swing that we didn't get called. So that's kind of how things are going. Them hits the ball right on the button, and it curves back to the second baseman. So, you know, we scored 10 runs. I was proud of that. The guys kept punching back, and you know, so that's a positive.
Like, is that a Little League coach talking? I'm proud of him. Yeah, 10 runs off one of the best pitchers in baseball. And then I love how he just casually was like, we just couldn't get outs. Like, see, I don't know, maybe that's part of the game, getting 27 outs and having pitchers that don't give the runs back that you scored. You know, and the NIM is a reference to Brandon Nimmo. He's hitting a line drive that ends up just getting caught. And, you know, what can you do? You know, it just... The sugarcoating there, and listen, it's one thing, and we did play a cut of Rod Brindamore saying it very easily, like that we didn't get swept after the Carolina Hurricanes were eliminated by the Florida Panthers in the Eastern Conference Finals in four games. And yes, they did get swept, but it's one thing to speak like that when your season's over and you are eliminated from the playoffs and you're reflecting back on a season. This is in the, you know, middle of June now when your team is going in the opposite direction. You just got swept by a division rival, and you lost the game last night in crushing fashion. He's talking about all those runs they scored. Well, anytime you score 10 runs, you better win the game. And it's almost like in the beginning there, he's kind of like chuckling almost. You know, what'd you think the first game was? And last night, you know, like, we competed. Like, okay. I do like that when the manager or coach gets up to a press conference and tries to be like, were you watching the same game I was watching, even though their team lost? And listen, I do think that there are certainly sports conversations that deserve to have proper context brought to them, and there is nuance at times in these things. It is not just as black and white as you win or you lose in all the time. But when you've lost six in a row and when you let one slip away, the way the Mets let go last night, how do you not feel anything other than, okay, it's time to do some soul searching? I mentioned the gut check for the Miami Heat with having to win tonight in game four of the NBA Finals to really find another level of, you know, competitiveness and all the things that the Heat do well. Well, this is kind of a gut check right now for the New York Mets. This was a team that was one of the most talked about teams of the offseason in Major League Baseball because all the Mets fans loved Uncle Steve Cohen and the money he was spending. And gosh, if he had it his way, you know, he's so close to getting Carlos Correa and all the pitching money that he invested in. Brandon Nimmo also re-signed at a big price. Edwin Diaz obviously got hurt in the World Baseball Classic. He got a big contract. But we heard nothing but Mets fans gushing over their owner and how badly he wanted to win. And so when these things happen and when you're now 8.5 games behind in your division, and anytime you're in these – listen, I think the extra wild card, the three wild cards is cool for baseball. I think the playoffs have allowed – you know, it's gotten better with that three-game wild card round that we saw for the first time debut last year. But anytime you're in the wild card race, it's always going to be a little bit of a lottery to an extent because you're competing with several more teams. And so there is still a lot of value in winning your division. And you looked at last year, the Mets and the Braves – played right down to the bitter end. I believe the Braves ended up winning the division via the head-to-head tiebreaker that they had on the Mets. And so now, a year later, when the Mets have spent all this money on their roster, they're the team that is three games below 500, 8.5 games out of first place behind those Braves, and it doesn't feel like they're even close. Verlander gets shelled last night. And I mean, again, the Mets were funneling a bunch of money into aging pitching. And then Edwin Diaz got hurt and they lost one of their key guys in the bullpen. And then you lose a game like last night and you're up, your manager. See, that seems like a manager when we listen to Buck there. That sounds like a guy that's worried he's losing the locker room, worried he's losing the clubhouse. And he's not very popular, and so he's trying to say something just to, you know, like the guy that won't get a text back from the girl and that's desperately trying to get her to text him back. Because when you're talking about how proud you are of your team, it seems like a desperate cry for, gosh, you guys don't really believe in me anymore. And you're not... We're finding ways to lose. How do I maintain a positive frame of mind? How do I make sure the clubhouse stays with me through this? We'll see, but it's ugly for the Mets, and that one could have been a negative turning point for them. We're back on the other side. First Name Sports, Sports Map Radio.
This is First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio studios, here's Greg Frank.
Well, I was coming up with a rundown today, and, you know, Fridays are usually a little bit more of a laid-back type show, shooting the breeze, getting you ready for the weekend, and this felt like a pretty good Friday segment, and it kind of just popped up out of thin air, which is one of the things I like about being in radio is the impromptu nature of some of the things that you decide to do, and you do have to kind of be prepared to cut on a dime, whether it be for breaking news or, in this case, for my own little segment that I wanted to get into, as we were looking for a good radio call of the Carter Verhaeghe game winner. We eventually found one with Doug Plagans there, and I think Belmer mispronounced his Verhaeghe's name, and I was like, you know what? Why is it that hockey players seem to be the hardest to pronounce? And I guess it's because they come from all over the world, and there's a lot more international names, and that vernacular, like there's so many different pronunciations and spellings that you have to figure out. So I decided we're going to try, and I got three players from each team in the Stanley Cup Final, and I'm going to try and see if Belmer can spell these names.
Oh.
And then I got some legends of the game as well.
Okay.
So let's start with the guy that got the game winner last night, Carter Verhaeghe.
Okay. I first of all, I thought it was Connor Verhaeghe.
Okay.
So I I was completely off on that.
Verhaeghe.
So I'm supposed to spell
try
the last name.
Try and
here?
Spell Verhaeghe.
Oh
yeah.
No. V-E-R.
There you go.
Okay. Sound it out. Verhaeghe. V-E-R-H-A-I.
Okay, that was your first wrong letter. Go ahead.
G-E-Y. Verhaeghe.
Okay. It was... Do we have like a... you guys did this to me one time when I was doing the movies.
Yeah.
An buzzer. It's V-E-R-H-A-E. G-H-E.
G-H-E. See, there's going to be all kinds of, like, the, you know, weird letters that I'm just not going to grab, bro.
Now, let's just say that, I mean, I don't think you saw the spelling when you said his name today. You heard the call and then said it yourself, right?
Yeah. I didn't look at it.
If I told you that that was how it was spelled, like, I don't think that I would have pronounced it any differently because – the beginning of the name, you got right, like V-E-R-H-A. And so it's the E-G-H-E at the end.
Yeah.
But how else would you say that?
Verhaeghean?
But there's no N.
I don't know
Verhaeghe,
how else you
maybe?
Say that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how else you could pronounce that one.
So basically, it's an easy one to pronounce, but it's a hard one to spell.
Yeah, because you got hidden letters in there.
Okay.
I'm guessing hidden letters is going to be a theme of this segment here.
Well, kind of, sort of. Matthew Tkachuk.
Okay. Tkachuk. T A C. Already?
Yeah.
No.
T. You want to finish it out?
Yeah. I don't know what. Tkachuk, T-A.
You know what? Actually, I should be doing this like the spelling bee and letting you spell the whole thing out and then
give
you yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Okay, I'll get I know it's wrong now, but T A C H U C K. Tkachuk.
Okay. Yeah, there you go. Look at you saying it at the end like those kids at the spelling bee. There you go.
You got to say it. It's spell it. Say it.
T K A.
What?
T K A C H U K. So you have a K at the beginning, and you don't have a C in front of the last K.
Why is there – okay, never mind. I know there's different rules and different – I've never seen a K after a T before.
Yeah, it's a weird one. And that is a big hockey name. His family, his brother plays for the Ottawa Senators, and his dad is a Hall of Famer. All right, last one on the Florida Panthers.
Okay, I'm 0-2 so far.
You're 0-2.
I feel like I'm going to go over here.
Hey, you'll do better than Charles Barkley did here. Sergei Bobrovsky.
Oh, Bobrovsky. Okay.
Yes. Well, yes. Hey, do you want to try and spell Sergei, too?
I'll stick with one.
Okay.
I'm already doing bad enough. Bobrovsky. B-O-B-R-O-S-K-Y. There's a V in there, too. Oh, man. Bobrovsky. B-O-B... V-R-O-S-K-Y? Bobrovsky?
Close. Yeah. I'm glad you corrected yourself and threw the V in. It's B-O-B-R-O-V-S-K-Y. So I think you said V-O-R. It's R-O-V.
Yeah. But did I do better than Charles, though?
Way better than Charles.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Good.
All right. Now let's go to the three guys on the Vegas.
Sergei Bobrovsky.
Let's go to the three guys on the Vegas Golden Knights. And let's start with the likely Conn Smythe Trophy winner, Jonathan Marchessault.
Oh, Lord. Marchessault?
Yeah.
Marchessault. M-A-R-S-H. Marsh. I. SSO? Marcheseau?
Okay, so I think this was your worst one so far.
That was the worst one?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's M-A-C-H, like the month March, or excuse me, M-A-R-C-H. E-S-S-A-U-L-T. It's a French-Canadian.
Okay.
So, like, is S-A-L-U-T is the long way of spelling S-O. Like, it's pronounced Marcheseau, but instead of just...
Where is he from?
He's from Canada. It's a French-Canadian in Quebec.
Okay.
It's a French-Canadian name.
That ends with a T.
Ends with a T.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So now you agree that that was probably your worst one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. But now that I'm hearing the ending of it, I'm not surprised.
Right. Okay, next one.
Okay.
William Carrier, another French-Canadian name, by the way, so a little bit of a hint there.
Carrier. Okay. Now, I've heard that similar pronunciation before, so I'm going to go out on a limb and say it ends with an R.
That is correct.
And
go ahead.
It's going to be spelled like carrier. Carrier.
Spell it.
C-A-R-R-I-E-R. Carrier. Hey!
We're on the board!
I got one.
Beautiful. All right. Last one of the current players in the Stanley Cup Final, and then we'll do a couple legends before we end the segment. Alex Pietrangelo.
Pietrangelo. That's kind of fun to say.
It is.
Alex Pietrangelo. Let's do Pietrangelo. P-E-T-R-A-N-G-L-O. Pietrangelo.
Close. P-I-E-T-R-A-N-G-E-L-O.
Okay, so it's Pietrangelo.
Correct. There's kind of like a silent I in there.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
That wasn't bad, though.
I'm fine. I got one. Like, I'm already feeling
good.
I'm feeling good.
Yeah. And honestly, Marcheseau was your only one that was way off.
That was bad. I missed a K after a T somewhere in there, too. So I think that was pretty off.
On what?
On the
Tkachuk. Yeah. That one was not great either. all right. A couple of legends. Patrick Waugh.
Patrick Waugh?
Yeah. How does he spell that?
Okay. Waugh. W-A-H? Wah?
Oh.
Oh, my God. Is that bad?
It's R-O-Y, like Roy.
Wait, what?
I'm dead serious.
And it's pronounced Wah?
It's pronounced
Where's
Wah.
He from? Where's that?
I believe he's another French-Canadian. So we can just blame Montreal. Yeah. Quebec.
God damn.
Yeah, he's from Quebec.
Wah.
Yeah, Patrick Wah, R-O-Y.
Patrick Roy.
So, yeah,
that's
exactly.
What I would call the man.
Okay, let's stay with one of his teammates runs the Colorado Avalanche, Joe Sakic.
Okay, repeat the last name?
Sakic.
Sakic.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I don't want to be mean, but that's a terrible last name. Sakic. S-A-C-K-I-C-K? Sakic?
That's... probably the like most common thing that people guess.
Yeah.
It's just S-A-K-I-C. So there's no C before the K and there's no K after the C.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
yeah, that's just, okay. I think I did good because I got one. I didn't expect to get any.
Hang
so
on,
I got
two more.
Oh, there's more.
Luke Robitaille.
Robitaille.
Yeah.
R-O-B-I-T-I-E? I mean, I know the I-E is not right at the end. I just don't know what else to say.
You were right until the end. R-O-B-I-T-A-I-L-L-E.
Oh.
Yeah. It gets a little messy.
Isn't that Robitaille?
Right. That's how people would pronounce it. And
right,
last one, the greatest hockey player ever, Wayne Gretzky. How do you spell Gretzky?
G-R-E-T-S-K-Y?
Close. Z-K-Y.
Oh, man.
So, all right. You know what? Not all of your wrong guesses were horrible, too. You got one right, and some of them you put up a good fight on. We'll take a timeout, and we'll come back. Some NFL news about DeAndre Hopkins, which we'll get to on the other side. 10th inning and Friday 5 all still coming as well. First Name Sports, Sports Map Radio.